I feel sorry for folks who are not here tonight. And that's a fact. The ever have a thought and you write it down somewhere and you write it down because you want to think about it some more? That's kind of one of my habits that I do, and I think about things. That's kind of the birthplace of at least some of the lessons. I think about things, and I try to boil it down to one sentence. And they're not profound. I'm not capable of anything profound, but they mean something to me. And I really also have a habit of when I want to find what I thought so highly of that I wrote it down, I've lost it somewhere. And that happened to me the other day, and I still haven't found whatever it is. And I really thought that it was really something intelligent, you know, but I can't find it. And I don't remember what it was. But I'll give you a for instance, and some of you can help me out with this. And I do this occasionally. While I was driving the other day for about 6 hours, you have time to do some thinking. And I was trying to sort out a particular thing in my mind. And I started the phrase out, and since then I've had a couple of possible endings for it. I'm not totally happy with any of them, but I'm still going to work on it some more. So I'm going to open it up if you want to help me out with the ending to it. And I'm being serious. This is not a joke. In order for someone to value your opinion, you must... All right? Now, don't think about that the whole time I'm preaching because I want you to follow along with me while I'm preaching. But give it some thought. And if you have something you think really that you like, well, share that with me. In order for someone to value your opinion, you must fill the blank. But the one that I want to introduce the lesson tonight is, and this is certainly not original. In fact, I don't have the ability to be original. You know that originality is the ability to forget where you got it anyway. And so, just something that occurred to me as I was working on this lesson, doing the hard things consistently is the difference between success and failure in life. Doing the hard things consistently. And I want to talk about one of the hard things tonight. And it's really easy to talk about, just like lots of other things. When we study it in our Bible, we can agree on it, generally. And then when it comes to applying it in our life, it's a really, really difficult thing to do. And I'm going to be sharing some thoughts and ideas about how to handle differences without hurting the church. And the best time to prepare yourself for that kind of thing is when it's not impending, when it's not a problem that you're dealing with. And if you'll sort things out in your mind and decide how you want to handle things before those difficult things in life arise, then you're much more likely to do the right thing when the time comes. And I know that I've used this illustration before, but it's still the one that came to my mind. And by the way, that may be a sign of the preacher who's been somewhere a long time. It's when he starts using the same illustrations over and over. But a number of years ago, when I was preaching in Oklahoma, and at least some of you know that we went through a serious time of difficulty there when we were in an effort to print Bibles in China. And there was a pending lawsuit against us. And the church was in danger of possibly losing its building due to a lawsuit. And I personally and the elders also were in danger of losing whatever we had in that same lawsuit. It was a really, really difficult time, and there wasn't very much that was funny in my life about that time. And I had a lot of difficulty for a long time sleeping at night, and I spent lots of time dragging a chair out in the middle of the dark somewhere and sitting out there and talking to the Lord. And by the way, that's not a bad thing when it's over, when you spend some time like that talking to the Lord. And sometimes you have to be really careful with the promises that you make, because the Lord expects you to live up to the promises that you make. But one day in the middle of this, one of the charter members of that church, who at that time was 80 plus years old, and he was pretty blunt in his demeanor, and that's a kind way of saying it. He came into my office and he just sat down without saying anything. He pulled his checkbook out and laid it on my desk and wrote out a check and tore it out of his checkbook and slid it across the desk, and it was a check for $1,000. And he said, "Preacher, I want to start an account for our legal defense. And I also want to tell you that I don't care if they hang you from the highest flagpole in town, but I don't want this church hurt. And I want you to know that I wasn't offended by what he said. I really honestly wasn't. In fact, I agreed with him. I honestly felt that way. And things were pretty tough at that time, and we didn't know what was going to happen. It was a very real, I had to consider all the possibilities that I could think of what might happen. And there didn't seem to be a lot of real positive things that could come out of this on the horizon that I could see at that time. But through the Lord's gracious mercy, it turned out that we didn't need a legal defense fund. It turned out that the church actually had insurance that covered some of our expenses along that line. And that old man's gone now. But I've smiled lots of times. And particularly whenever I was facing something I felt like was really difficult, that has come to my mind. And it brings a smile to my face. "Preacher, I don't care if they hang you from the highest flagpole in town, but I don't want to see this church hurt." You know, I don't know if he'd have felt that way about himself, if he wouldn't have minded himself being hung from. I don't know about that, you know. But he was certainly willing to sacrifice me. And I thought a lot about that over the years. And I really think that that's one way to verbalize a foundation for settling differences between us. I think if we'll view it in light of the church and the impact that it has on the church, then hopefully we'll view it differently than "my pride is hurt. And I don't like what this person said or didn't say or what they did or didn't do." And that will become secondary. And that's what Paul told the Corinthian Christians, because they weren't handling any of their problems very well. And in one of the problems that they were even taking one another to court, he told them that the solution to that was be willing to suffer the wrong. And that comes off the lips really easy. But that's a tough thing to do when it comes down to it. And when it's real life blood, and when it's somebody that has, in fact, said something to deliberately hurt you, or it at least feels that way. And you're trying to figure out what to do. And your mind is screaming out, you know what to do. And that is, go knock their block off. And that really comes down to whether or not we want to follow Christ, or whether or not it's more important to us to salvage what we consider our pride in this thing. The very last thing that any of us want is to hurt the church. And I would suggest that when we have a difficulty, and there will be difficulties, when we have a difference, and there will be differences, that's where we start. That we'll suffer anything rather than see the church hurt. Paul's admonition to the Thessalonian Christians regarding this, their attitude toward their leaders. He said, "We ask you, brothers, respect those who work hard among you, who are over you in the Lord, who admonish you, hold them in the highest regard and love because of their work." And then he completes that thought by saying, "Live in peace with each other." And and I want to think, why? Why is that so important? Why can't I have a difference with a brother and he sit over here and I sit over here? And he goes out this door and I go out that door. You know, because one of the reasons is because there's a natural tendency to criticize and accuse and impugn the motives of others whenever there's something that we disagree with them, particularly something that's important to us that we disagree with them. But we need to be reminded that the way to maintain unity is to live at peace with each other and do whatever is necessary to do that, to live at peace. And what probably is necessary is for you to sacrifice your pride. And if you wait for the other person to do it, it probably is not going to happen. And so it's something that we all need to practice, and we need to practice it in small ways so that when big waves come, we can practice it then too. How do we as Christians handle differences? And it is inevitable that differences will occur. First thing is how we view, how we see those differences. One of Satan's most powerful tools for destroying the church and the church's influence, both within and without, is to use differences to create hard feelings and divide the church and develop little cliques within the church. And I want to stop right here and say something that I never have said anything about Bob Odle publicly, but I talked to Bob Odle for several hours before I came here. And I want to say that I have a lot of respect for Bob. For one reason, because he didn't make any problems when he left, and he could have. It's really easy for a preacher, and there are people immediately, whenever there's something that is a difficulty, it's almost inevitable that his close friends will come to him. And without really meaning to, will encourage him to stand up for his rights, whatever that may be. And it's really hard not to do that, particularly when you have people that you love and respect and they're encouraging you to do that. But he didn't. And I really respect and appreciate the fact that he didn't. And I want you to know, in case you don't, he could have. But he chose not to. I respect a preacher that when the time comes, particularly if they leave under difficult circumstances, that they leave without making any ripples. And that's a hard thing to do. And I want you to respect that. I want you to realize that the story could have been different at that time. How do we as Christians handle differences? Well, we can go find a role model in the Corinthian church, a role model of what not to do. And that's not bad. That's because the truth is, what they were doing is a lot more common than what Paul was telling them that they needed to do. And the way that they were handling problems was the common way of handling problems. And it still is, and it always has been. They were allowing practically everything to become a source of division in that church, and that church was in a mess. And so when we start talking about we want to restore the first century church, I don't want to restore the first century church. Let's get that really plain. I don't want to restore it. I want to restore the New Testament church. And they should have been, and hopefully would have been, trying to do that very same thing. And when they followed the instructions that were given from God, then they were in that way restoring the church, because they were measuring themselves by the truth. And that's exactly what we should be doing and what we must be doing. They were everything from who baptized me. Now, why would you allow divisions and cliques to develop over who baptized me and start bragging about who baptized you? Now, if anything sounds childish, but they didn't see it as childish, and that's an interesting thing. We can act like a little baby and everybody can see it but us. They were divided over a case of overt immorality in the church. the church was divided over it. This guy had taken his father's wife, whether that's his stepmother or mother or whatever it was, in an immoral situation. The church was aware of it, and there were some people who were his friends who were supporting him in that, and there were other people who were saying, no, we've got to do something about this. And the church was divided. And they were divided over what kind of meat they could eat. If it was sold over here, could they eat it? If it was sold out of this store, could they eat it? Where it came from, they were divided over spiritual gifts. And some people felt a sense of pride because they could do this and somebody else couldn't do it. There were about 13 specific problems that Paul addressed in that first epistle to the church at Corinth. They had allowed everything to become a source of division. These things became issues. And if the New Testament had been completed, which it wasn't, they would have gone to the Scriptures and pulled out some proof texts to prove that they were right. And at least some of them found themselves defending ungodly behavior. They were filing lawsuits against one another. What kind of church was that? It wasn't a place where I'd want to go, would you? I'd rather go to another congregation somewhere. But there wasn't another one there in Corinth. You know, it's possible to pay too great a price for victory. I guess one way you can have peace is you can kill everybody around you. And then you have peace. But then you have to live with what it costs. Think about that whenever you go after somebody in a difference. You can pay too much for victory. One of the most beautiful things about being a Christian and being in a Christian family is that we live by different rules and different standards than the world does. Early on in this epistle, first epistle to the Corinthians, Paul summarizes how they're acting in these words. You're still worldly, for since there is jealousy and quarreling and divisions among you, are you not worldly? Are you not acting like mere men? And you would think that it might insinuate that he expected them to act somehow differently than men acted normally, wouldn't you? And then he says in chapter 4, verse 16, I urge you to imitate me. And then in chapter 9, beginning in verse 19, he warns of attitudes, or he summarizes how he lives. And if you're going to tell somebody to follow you, then you're going to have to tell them what it is that you want them to follow you in. And so, beginning in chapter 9, verse 19, though I am free and belong to no man, I make myself a slave to everyone. That's the way he begins it. And then he puts out three scenarios. To the Jews, and then he'll say, or literally he says, to those who are under law, I act this way. To those who are not under the law, I act this way. And to the weak, and they could be either under the law or not under the law, I act this way. And so here's what he says. To the Jews, or those under law, I became like a Jew, or one under law, to win the Jews. Well, we could have a real, I think, interesting, profitable, maybe even fun conversation about how, if you were not a Jew, would you act like a Jew? And if you were a Jew, would you act like you were not a Jew? That'd be pretty interesting, and I would suggest it would be worth your time to put some thought into that. Because that means he made some really radical changes in his life for some reason. He says, I make myself a slave to everyone, and then he tells you why. To win as many as possible. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I'm not free from God's law, but under Christ's law. Now, he put a couple of pretty good little inserts in there, didn't he, about not being under the law. And then he said, but I'm not free from law, I'm under God's law. I'm not free from God's law, I'm under Christ's law. And by the way, if you want a little insight into what he probably is meaning here, you can go to Galatians chapter 6, verse 2, and he says, if we carry one another's burdens, we fulfill the law of Christ. So that's what the law of Christ is all about, caring for one another and reaching out to one another and carrying each other's burdens. And so he says, I'm not free from God's law, but I'm under Christ's law, so as to win those having the law. To the weak, I became weak, to win the weak. I've become all things to all men, so that by all possible means I might save some. I do this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings, or be a fellow partaker in the gospel. And so he tells what attitude it is that he has, that guides his actions, that he says, I want you to follow me. I want you to imitate me. And then in chapter 12, that's the way he wants you to act. And then he gives a warning in chapter 12. This is that kind of attitude that develops when divisions exist. And this entire chapter, actually, but the point that he's making here, we lose sight of the fact that it is God who designed the body. Do you think that God knows that we're imperfect? And so if we discover some imperfection in another brother, do you think he wants us to bring that to the surface and make a deal out of that and ostracize that person because of it? Do you think God doesn't know that? God designed the body. You think God doesn't know that we're all weak? Do we want somebody to jerk the covers off of us? Love covers a multitude of sins. Do we want somebody to jerk the covers off of us whenever we've done something wrong? Do we want them to go to somebody and talk about it? And so there are some attitudes that develop whenever these divisions take place. And one of them is we get the attitude. It's real easy for us to get the attitude, well, I'm not needed here. And so I'll just leave. And he addresses that. He says, now the body is not made up of one part but many. If the foot should say, because I'm not a hand, you see he's talking about his attitude about himself, the foot's attitude about himself. Because I'm not a hand, I don't belong to the body. It would not for that reason cease to be a part of the body. And if the ear should say, because I'm not an eye, I don't belong to the body. It would not for that reason cease to be a part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the sense of hearing be? If the whole body were an ear, where would the sense of smell be? But in fact, God arranged the parts of the body, every one of them. That's you and that's me. God arranged the parts of the body, every one of them, just as he wanted them to be. If they were all one part, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts of one body. So that addresses whenever there are divisions, we get to thinking, well, I'm not wanted here. I'm not needed here. And so we just say, well, I'll leave. He said, God put you where you are. So when you abandon your post, you need to understand who you're abandoning. When you let your pride get in your way, and you decide, well, I just don't belong here. Then remember who put you at your post. And then there's another attitude that develops when there are divisions, and that is, I don't need you. And that may be the most common one of all. Maybe, I don't know, maybe for some folks it's more common for them to say, well, I'm not needed. Maybe because of your personality. Or maybe your personality would say, no, I don't need you. And it'd be fine with me if you left. And he addressed that. The eye cannot say to the hand. You see, the ear and the foot were talking about to themselves. Because I'm not like this and I'm not needed. But now these body parts start addressing one another. The eye cannot say to the hand, I don't need you. The head cannot say to the feet, I don't need you. On the contrary, these parts of the body that seem to be the weaker are indispensable, and the parts that we think are less honorable we treat with special honor. And the parts that are unpresentable are treated with special modesty, while our presentable parts need no special treatment. But God has combined the members of the body and has given greater honor to the parts of it that lack, so that there should be no division in the body, but that its parts should have equal concern for one another. Boy, that's our goal. That's where we're headed. If one part suffers, every part suffers with it. One part is honored, Every part rejoices with it. You know, it's a beautiful thing to be in God's family. Because one reason is because we handle our differences different than people in the world. We're not content to just let those differences be, and I'll sit on one side of the auditorium and you sit on the other side. We don't allow those differences to divide us. We probably are not going to be able to completely settle all the differences that we may have with all the folks that are around us. I mean, if we all thought exactly the same way about everything, then there's only one person doing the thinking for everybody, isn't it? And so we're going to have differences. And we need to develop an attitude of how are we going to handle, how am I going to handle those differences when they occur? Have you ever been so caught up in something you couldn't see the forest for the trees? In Louisiana, we said, when you're up to your armpits in alligators, it's difficult to remember that your objective was to drain the swamp. Well, sometimes we feel like we're up to our armpits in alligators. We just have lots of problems, and we take our eyes off the goal, and all that we can see are the problems. And our life becomes a problem. And we become negative. Our present circumstances become so overwhelming that we lose sight of the long-range goal. And to this church, which has allowed itself to be fragmented by the differences, he pinpoints what I believe is the principle that lifts us as Christians and our view, our individual, above our individual feelings and our struggles, and renews a God view for us. I want to see things through God's eyes. I want to see things the way that God sees them as much as is possible for me too. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 19, to me, one of the perhaps most profound statements in at least the book of Corinthians, if not the entire New Testament, it says, no doubt there have to be differences among you to show which of you has God's approval. I wish I'd said that. But I think that bears a lot of thought on our part. Because I don't think he's just saying that there have to be differences to show which of you has a God's approval. I don't think he's just saying to see which side you come down on. Because you see, sometimes in differences, there's not a right and a wrong side. There can be two wrong sides, for sure, can't there? And that depends on what your attitude is. No doubt there have to be differences to show which of you has God's approval. I think that's about attitude. A lot more than I do which side. I don't think coming down on this side or this side is what it is that shows who has God's approval. I think it's the attitude that each person has. And if we have the attitude that God had, not so much discussing whether we're on this side or this side, what you allow those differences to do to you, how you handle those differences. In other words, differences, more than anything else, shows who has the mind of Christ and who doesn't have the mind of Christ. And you know what passage I have to go to whenever you bring that up, in Philippians chapter 2, beginning in verse 1. If you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if there's any comfort from his love, if there's any fellowship with the Spirit, if there's any tenderness and compassion. And so we start out and at this passage, and I would ask you this. In your heart, is there any encouragement from being united with Christ? Is there any comfort in his love? Is there any fellowship with the Spirit? Is there any tenderness and compassion within you? Well, if there is, then he says, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and purpose. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others, and your attitude should be the same as that of Christ, and you know what that is, don't you? Who, existing in form, God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing. Taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the cross, or to death, even death on the cross. And you know that that means in Deuteronomy chapter 21, he became accursed from God, anyone who's hung on a tree. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place. Therefore, why? Because he humbled himself and gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth. Every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of the Father. When there are differences, and there will be differences, we all have differences. For the sake of the Lord's kingdom, for the sake of the church, for the future of the church here, so that God will be glorified in his body, and for your own soul's salvation's sake, handle such differences with the attitude that Christ does, with an open heart, an open mind, without making personal attacks, without going immediately to your friends and telling them how badly you've been treated, without making any kind of veiled threats like, I'll leave if this doesn't happen. Like losing your temper. Like throwing in your own private agenda into the mix. Because you see, somebody who has a private agenda is going to do what they want to regardless of what happens. Without refusing to listen to the concerns of others. Those concerns are as real as your own. Without repeating rumors. Are poisoning the well. And if every single one of us will determine that we're going to do this, then the Lord can bless our future as a church. And we can maintain unity and love and harmony. And I'm really, really happy. I had a lesson this morning about why I'm happy to be a part of this congregation. And I really meant every word I said. I'm really proud that you let me be your preacher. I'm proud to be associated with this congregation. And one of the reasons that I didn't mention is because of the unity that we have. It doesn't mean that we don't have differences. But to this point, we haven't allowed those differences to be blown out of proportion. And those differences have been handled. If Satan is creating in your heart feelings of dislike and anger and alienation and hostility, then he's found a tool that he's going to use to defeat you. And don't ever think that he won't. He will defeat you, and he will rob you of your spirituality, and you'll get to a point where you don't continue to grow spiritually. This will take the place and crowd out your spirituality. Psalm 133:1, how good and pleasant it is when brothers live together in unity. And the congregation said, it's like precious oil poured on the head. It is as if the dew of Hermon were falling on Mount Zion. For there the Lord bestows his blessing, even life forevermore. Differences. Boy, it can be anything. I've known of churches that were split because somebody cut down the oak tree that somebody's grandpa planted. That's the truth. I've known of people that got angry and left because somebody cut a fig tree down on the back part of the lot. Well, I tell you what, I don't want to lose my soul, but I sure don't want to lose my soul over a fig tree. You know what I'm saying? I don't know that there's anything in this world. In fact, I really hope that there's not anything big enough in this world that caused me to lose my soul. But it doesn't have to be big. It can be little. I mean, if you want to get mad, you can get just as mad about something little as you can something big. And so how are we going to handle our differences? Well, we're going to handle them with the mind of Christ. And if somebody's not handling them that way, then we're going to go to them gently, kindly, and with love, and we're going to say, here's how we need to handle this problem. And if they take kindly to it, that'll be wonderful. If they don't take kindly to it, then the problem is going to be solved in that process, in that effort to do what Christ tells us to do. How to handle differences without harming the church. Uppermost on our hearts and minds. And it's really kind of fun to preach a lesson like this when I'm not looking out at somebody that's saying, I know he's talking about me. It's a lot better and a lot easier to teach and preach a lesson like that whenever there's not some kind of disaster brewing. And so, if there's something in your life that you know you've allowed to get out of proportion, and it's crowded out your spirituality in your life, and you recognize that, you have brothers and sisters who would very much love to pray to God about that. And if you're not a Christian, this is a great family of God's people to be a part of. Won't you come?
Oh, do not let the word depart.